You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I'm Lexi, my friend in the studio, Karen Rackman's with you. Hi, Karen, how are you?
Oh, I'm good, thank you.
Thank you for coming in. Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce Karen Rackman to you. Karen is someone I met a couple of years ago and basically super fanboyed hard out because Karen is a music supervisor professionally,
yes.
Aren't you?
Yes.
Now, what sort of job is that, Karen?
Well, filmmakers bring me onto their film to supervise the music.
Just super, you mean like put together the soundtrack
of
thing?
Sometimes, most often, that would be it. If a lot of times it's, and most times it's delivering their vision. Sometimes they don't necessarily know what their vision is. So I help them. But a lot of times they know exactly what they want, and it's my job to do the business and make sure they get it.
So, Karen, that sounds like quite a fun job. Have you ever been involved in anything interesting?
Well, this morning I'm doing an interview on your show.
What I'm trying to get to here, ladies and gentlemen, is that Karen has been responsible for some of the most life-changing moments in your life. And I could prove it by saying, Karen, what soundtracks have you worked with?
Reservoir Dogs.
Reservoir Dogs, ladies and gentlemen.
Pulp Fiction. Hold on.
Pulp Fiction?
Uh-huh. Boogie Nights.
Boogie Nights.
Romeo and Juliet. Moulin Rouge. Clueless. Grace of My Heart. Rugrats.
Bulworth. Judgment
Did
Night.
Did I say Bulworth? Judgment Night. Mystery Men.
Judgment Night as well. My God.
We never talk about Mystery Men.
Mystery Men's the one with the guy who had the spade.
Yeah. What was his name in the case?
The Shoveler?
Yeah, The Shoveler.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
those are some of the greatest movies of all time, and
there's more.
Without a doubt, yeah. Karen, please.
No.
That Romeo and Juliet soundtrack, for people of my age, was a game changer.
Yeah. No.
Absolute game changer.
It was, and look, quite frankly, I'm a very lucky person to have worked with filmmakers like Baz Luhrmann, who have such a clear, insane vision of what they want, and the hard job was delivering it. You know, but he knew what he wanted. All the way through.
The first movie that you sort of, when you say the movie that put you on the map was Reservoir Dogs, putting together that magnificent soundtrack.
Yes.
Congratulations to you, Karen.
Thank you.
How did that whole thing work?
22 years ago or something?
I know, but I mean, change people's lives. Changed almost everyone listening that has seen that movie or heard that soundtrack. It would have changed your life, surely.
Yes.
Surely.
Yeah.
Even if you're out at a bar and someone went, the music came on. Right. So, I mean, how did your relationship with Quentin Tarantino kick off?
Well, Reservoir Dogs, nobody knew who Quentin was. And a friend of mine, Stacey Scher, who is now a huge producer, she told me, you got to read this script. This Quentin guy, he needs help. He needs the song. He needs the song stuck in the middle with you. He needs to shoot to it, and his music supervisor is telling him he can't have it. In fact, he needs other 70 songs, and he can't have them. Because they can't afford it, and she's telling him he needs to use sound-alikes.
Just to recap for people that haven't seen the movie, in the movie, that scene that he envisaged using that song for is a kidnapped policeman who's been slightly mutilated, and they're pouring petrol all over him.
As they dance and sing to the song Stuck in the Middle with You.
So this was his vision to use that song.
Yeah, 100%. Like, he had to have it. He wrote the scene to it. Yeah.
Absolute heavy hitters. You've got Little Green Bag, George Baker selection, Hooked on a Feeling.
So anyway, those were all Quentin's vision, really, for the most part, most of those songs. And what I did is I read the script. I thought it was the most brilliant thing I ever read. I got on the phone. I did everything in my power to make sure he could get Stuck in the Middle with You. He then said to me, oh, my gosh, thank you. What can I do for you? And I said, fire your music supervisor and hire me. And that was the start. Okay.
And there was an issue with that song, though, wasn't there, initially?
Well, first of all, it was little to no money. And second of all, it was in such a violent scene. How do you go to somebody, send them the script pages, say, here's...
Is that what you have to do? You have to send them what...
Very often, yeah. Especially when you're dealing with no money. You know, you really have to put on...
Do us a favor.
Yeah, sort of you know. So Jerry Rafferty, I think it was Joe Egan I was on the phone with, and he had just become... I don't recall. But anyway, he was not easy. I remember that. And it took a long time, and I had to equate Singing in the Rain as used in Clockwork Orange. So that was my
cooking. Yeah, well played.
And we got it. And yeah. I don't think they've been sorry.
So then you went on to the next hopeful stab in the dark, Pulp Fiction.
I think actually I think from Reservoir Dogs I went to Reality Bites.
Oh my God! Did you hear that as well?
Yeah.
Jesus,
yeah, that's a good one. I like that one.
They're all pretty good. Just so you know,
Reality Bites was great fun. Yeah. I just watched it. It's funny every time I come to New Zealand. Like it's flattering, but one of my movies seems to be, or that I worked on, is on the air. And I think last time I was here, I was like watching Reality Bites on TV. That was fun.
Just patting your ego, eh?
Yes.
Nicely.
Yes.
And so, but I mean, stuff like Reality Bites is a life changer as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think so.
And with Pulp Fiction, I mean, hell's teeth, Karen. I mean, when you saw how big that got, especially, and it's so, that one in particular, I think more than Reservoir Dogs, is so soundtrack-based, you know? Like, that movie would be nothing without the songs that are in it, you know? Not nothing, but I mean,
Quentin's nothing. Yeah. Without
no, yeah, but you know what I mean. It's like it's,
oh,
it's
kidding.
It was a moment. It was a when you first saw music really. As part of, as just important a part of the whole process as,
well,
you know, as the visuals.
I think it's an interesting thing. You know, with filmmakers, people are always ready and critical and waiting for people's sophomore movie, their second movie. And with Quentin Tarantino, it's like, how are you going to be better than Reservoir Dogs, you know? And and he was. And it was the same thing with the soundtrack. It was just that much more. You know what I mean? It was just that much more insane out there, da, 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 da. And that's Quentin.
I was having a private moment in the weekend to Let's Stay Together.
Mm-hmm.
Ralph Allen, yeah, that's features on that soundtrack. And what are you laughing at? Are you thinking private? You've had a few private moments to that song as well?
I think everybody's had a lot of private moments to Hal Green. Come on.
Oh, my God. Oh, yes. But, I mean, How great a collection of music is that movie alone? Yeah, you know, and so how do you sort of get, and that's way back, like I say, it was 20 years ago, eh? Wasn't it? Pulp Fiction?
You know, I think back how I figure out how long ago these things were is the age of my children. And I'm thinking, was Arlo born then? And
it's good yardsticks,
no,
kids.
I think. Or he was just born, yeah. So
What's the difference between working on a movie like Pulp Fiction and then putting together a soundtrack for something like Romeo and Juliet or Moulin Rouge?
Well, look, I have to say, we're talking, like, we're working with Baz Luhrmann. And by the way, I was an executive soundtrack producer on Moulin Rouge and Romeo and Juliet, meaning I was on behalf of the record company, and I picked up the rights to the record and worked with them as the record label, as opposed to being on as a music supervisor.
Right.
But it was, you're working for filmmakers who have a complete vision. Anything I can add to it creatively is great, but most of my job is doing the business and making sure they get what they want. And in the case of being an executive producer, making sure they have the money that they need from the record label to pay for it. You know,
There's no such thing as people doing favors in Hollywood, is there really? People like to get paid, hey?
Well, in kind, maybe. Favors for favors. Would that be
I think, you know, the thing is people will do things for low budget. If you're working on a low budget movie, people will do things, first of all, just to get some money, but it's also, if you're putting yourself in a great movie, if you're putting your song in a great movie, that's great exposure.
Totally.
There's a lot of people out there that will just put music, it's not well known, but in movies for free, you know, and not, I always think people should get paid for their work, no matter what, even if it's just, you know, $50 or something, but people will put it in for free because they also get the royalty income if the film does well.
Sure.
And they also get the exposure. So, people will do things.
But there must be. Are people pretty good at reading a script and going, that movie's going to be huge? Because I imagine this movie.
Honestly, no. I mean, look at all the movies out there. Yeah. You know, I think I'm pretty good at knowing when
obviously, this is what I'm asking.
If really, what's my talent? Like, I would say, like, I know when a movie's going to be good, and I will do everything in my power to make sure that filmmaker gets what they want.
What film have you worked on that everybody else was going, oh, I don't know?
Oh, Romeo and Juliet.
Really?
Yeah. People were like, at Fox Studios and stuff back in the day, they were like, what, Shakespeare? They're speaking in Shakespearean. People were freaking out. The record label didn't ship enough records. They just gave up hope.
I've got a special collector's edition of that soundtrack.
Me too.
Boom shakalaka.
God, I love that film.
A little red box with like velvet and stuff. Could you please play a song off that that album for us, Sarah?
I certainly
Sarah,
can.
One particular song. This is a Swedish band, The Cardigans?
Yes, and I we talked about this song because I think I had a big part in delivering the song, and everybody thought this song wasn't going to be a hit.
But then, I mean, The Cardigans didn't have anywhere near as much fame or exposure until after that film and after that soundtrack.
Right. In fact, so this song, I think, came out and died. And I was like, you have to use this. This song is a hit. It was. I just knew it.
Oh, my God. Are you the hitmaker?
I'm the hitmaker.
I thought I was the hitmaker.
They've never thanked me.
Oh, Dean just says that that Let's Stay Together was their wedding song. And someone else said Pulp Fiction music an absolute inspiration and game changer. Best movie soundtrack ever, says Paul. I love you, says somebody else.
We're definitely not done. We'll play some Cardigans and then we'll go to the news, but we'll be back with Karen very soon.
Thank you.
BFM. Have a private moment.
I'm so in love with you. Whatever you want to do is all right with me. 'Cause you make me feel so brand new.
Do you know what I love about what you do, Karen? I really love the way that this song is already awesome, already awesome, and then you chuck it into a movie like Pulp Fiction, you place it carefully into a movie like Pulp Fiction, and it just gives it another whole life of its own, you know? Means another whole bunch of things again, you know?
That's
cool.
That's Quentin, you know.
Have you ever sort of, do you ever think you've saved a movie with your soundtrack?
I'll tell you the sad thing is, there's a lot of times when you're working on a bad movie, they'll think that the music can save it.
Oh, yes.
And so you're brought on, and if the movie still sucks, it's like, you didn't save our movie. So I've worked on those, and I think I've made some betters. And I think there's certain scenes that I've certainly, like, made that scene so much better. I think.
Yes, you have, just so you know.
I think so.
Someone's texted and said, what an amazing person and an amazing job. You must be so proud of what you've achieved. How does someone go about doing what you do?
Thank you. Because this is basically what I just want to be you, basically.
Well, and I've told you that, and I think we've...
And I want to be you.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll do Swapsy Day. We'll have Wacky Wednesday.
You know, Mike talks about head transplants on this show quite a lot.
Does he?
So maybe that's why you're here. Is that why, Karen?
Do you want to swap heads? Or?
I think I could... handle.
Yeah, I've got a massive neck though. We discussed that already this morning. But how do you get to doing that? Because I mean, you've been involved in record companies as well, eh?
Yes. I was vice president of Capitol Records, and that's where Romeo and Juliet and Boogie Nights and a lot of other movies. And then I was the head of soundtracks for Interscope Records. So, and had my own label there too. So yeah, I've been on both sides.
Did you enjoy working in the right in the guts of the record industry? And that,
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Because it's painted as an evil job full of thieves and vagabonds. Oftentimes, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I have to say, like, when I was at Capitol Records, it was the height of my career, and I had great records, so I was treated very well, and it was a great time. But I really didn't like the corporate lifestyle. And then going to Interscope was very different. You know, it was working for Jimmy Iovine was the most amazing experience you could have. You know, it wasn't like working corporate. But yeah, the record industry has its bad reputation, well deserved, but it's also back in the day, it was what brought everything, put all this music out. Now it's not quite the same. But
how did you first become a renowned music supervisor? Because there must be a whole bunch of people out there trying to do it, like, you know.
Yeah. I was that person, and I'm sure a lot of people out there are too, that always put soundtracks together, you know, mixtapes and soundtracks, and this is a
song.
See,
this is so cool, I like this bit. Go.
No, just passionate about music, and passionate about music to movies, and seeing movies, and just, you know, the passionate drive that happens. And then I got a job for a film company way back when called Canon Films, and they put out all these schlocky movies and some good ones, and got to learn everything. And when I say everything, this is like sending a fax and a telex and answering the phone and typing and also negotiating rights to songs. I learned how to do that, and working with a director and helping them get something when they wanted something, and, you know, reaching out to the artist. So I was so passionate about it. I then went on to work for Island Records and Island Music, submitting songs to films. Came back to New Zealand, actually, for a little bit after that. Came back and then just was like, I'm determined, and worked on some real low-budget films, and then got Reservoir Dogs, and it sort of took off.
Woo. And do you remember growing up what your favorite soundtrack was? The first time that you... Like, if you could put...
You know what? The first soundtrack that sort of... It's interesting because the first soundtrack that I recall really realizing the importance of music was Paris, Texas. I dug that a lot. I know there were other ones, and now I can't remember, but...
Somebody's texting a fantastic question. Also, because Mike recently interviewed Edgar Wright about Baby Driver, which is so... Music plays an important role in that film. But a texter said, would it be fair to say that you have set a template somewhat for movies like Guardians of the Galaxy and Baby Driver?
I would say I came in at a time where soundtracks had a new importance. And so, to an extent,
I think. But I think to give yourself some credit, Karen, because of what the work that you've done making, you know, like those soundtracks, all the ones we're talking about, are so watertight. You know, there's no filler. You know, they're all like, and that's true. That's the art of it, surely. You know? And I know it's funny you should mention Baby Driver, Sarah, because when we had lunch the other day, Karen and I sort of mentioned, hey, see, Baby Driver, soundtrack's really good. And Karen sort of admitted to me that she's a little bit jealous.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. I am going to see it. But you're not, you know, I told you that, like, as my, like, very good friend here in Auckland. Like, don't tell anybody this.
No, but I thought that was really, really sweet and just shows how much you love doing what you do.
Yeah,
interesting that Edgar Wright did say that a lot of those songs have been part of his life for 25 years. So he's been making a mixtape, basically, for that amount of time. So that's,
you know. Right, and filmmakers like, you know, with Quentin Tarantino and Paul Thomas Anderson too on Boogie Nights.
I think it's amazing. Yeah, I think it's amazing.
With Quentin,
good guy though, too. Good guy. Interview him.
Oh, lovely guy. Yeah. Lovely guy. With Quentin is like I talk about on Pulp Fiction. The hardest part of my job was he spelled everything wrong. And I didn't, and he would give me song titles and he'd go, but he, I remember going to his apartment and him giving me a list of songs and saying, and giving me the Urge Overkill record because he wanted that version of that song. And so that I could clear all this music. But, you know, like a lot of the surf music that he wanted, I was like, there is no song called this. He's like, yes, there is. Yes, there is. And I'd have to go back over to his house and look through his records to find out actually what the song was called and how it was spelled.
But that Urge Overkill song in Pulp Fiction, that was their, that was their moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. It really was.
It was the, how do you get, you've set such a precedent for yourself. That must be, I guess that's all professionals do that. They've done such a good job that you must constantly be trying to, you worry about trying to outdo yourself or you know, do you worry about the next project being as good as the last one?
I had a great run, you know, I'm having a great run. I'm not doing it so much anymore. I'm interested in doing it again, but I've moved on to other things. But each one was a new challenge. That's the beauty of what I do, like the most fun getting into it. Back to the caller's question, we can touch on that, but the great fun of doing it is that it's always different. You know, it's like, you know, from, you know, you go from Quentin Tarantino to Reality Bites to Clueless to, you know, Ghetto Superstar to Bullworth, you know, and working on just, so it's always like you're working with different musicians and different music, you know. It's not like I am the hip hop person or I am this, I am that, you know. I really just get to work with great music and great filmmakers.
I like when you tell me the story once of Warren Beatty who made Bullworth, and him saying, him coming to you just with this desire for, I want some gritty urban hip hop. Just trying to imagine Warren Beatty.
Yeah, he said he got way into it. Do you remember that movie?
Not so much, but I remember you telling me the story.
Yeah. He rapped in that movie too. We had Muggs produce his track, but it didn't get on the record. But he did rap. You should watch that movie.
Warren Beatty,
it's
rapping.
Very interesting. Yeah, you should watch that movie. It's interesting. And unfortunately, the music was a fantastic soundtrack, and it didn't play that well in the film, but it really stood alone as a soundtrack. And when I say it didn't play that well in the film, they had Marconi do the score, and it was phenomenal. But for all the great songs that we recorded, Warren decided that they didn't work to picture for him.
Sure.
But he loved the soundtrack, and he loved the success of it and how well it did. But he was like, you know, he wanted "Bust a Cap Up Your Ass" music. You know, like that's the lyrics he wanted.
That's Warren Beatty we all know. Oh no. I want to keep talking about this for hours and hours and hours, but we should probably move on to what you've been doing more recently, which is when I first met you, you just come off producing "Sweet Mickey for President" with Prez from the Fugees.
Yes, I was here.
That's pretty grown up, producing a movie.
I executive produced a movie that really never saw the light of day, but was an award winner called Archie's Final Project, or My Suicide, which was an interesting, cute film. And then I produced Sweet Mickey for President, which was a documentary with Pras Michelle from the Fugees. And I know Pras from Bullworth. We did Ghetto Superstar together. And it was a fantastic little movie. And
That's a great documentary. Amazing story.
Yeah, I think it's on Netflix here and And it's interesting because the parallels to Trump and Sweet Mickey for President are interesting. So that was a lot of fun. Yeah,
so people know, it's about a recent sort of run for presidency in Haiti, which where Prowse is from. Is that right?
Yeah.
And the story is phenomenal. Like the what happens in
it's
the story.
Unbelievable.
It's
unbelievable.
It's a true, it's a documentary. It's a true story. And it's kind of cool that it didn't sort of, it's not well known around the world, like that story.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can do a documentary and surprise people with it.
Well, people do know about Wyclef running for president.
Yeah,
because
he ran for president of Haiti. That's right.
And he shows up in the movie, and you do follow that because it's in the same
twists.
President.
Yeah, even
it's
more
pop
twists.
Stars running for president. I mean, now we have reality stars, and
that's bizarre. And are you going to do any more stuff like that?
Well, lately I've been consulting a lot, working for brands and Activision on their TV show and games and stuff like that, and movies. And I really, really want to produce again. And I really am enjoying consulting, and I'd like to music supervise again, too. But, the last 2 years, as I've been going back and forth to New Zealand, and now I'm going to base myself here for a bit.
Good call. We'd love to have you here. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to be here every Tuesday at 8:30.
Yep, sure.
Okay.
That's that then.
All right. Okay, thanks.
Hey, I'm Karen. Thank you so much for coming in.
My
love you.
Pleasure.
And,
I love you too.
I really could just talk about this for a million years.
So nice. I hope I gave that person advice.
Well,
I don't know. Just do student movies, I think. Do student movies and reach out and get to know filmmakers. You're not going to be able to do anything.
What about filmmakers should get to know people like that as well, though? Filmmakers should reach out for people who know about music.
I sort of do feel that in New Zealand there's a missing element here. They need music supervisors that are much more...
Hello? That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah, they do need people who are passionate, who can do the business with the states to make sure you get the music that you want and don't overpay for it, and put together a soundtrack and make sure that soundtrack has the audience that it deserves. I see that sort of lacking so far in New Zealand, and hopefully that will change you and I here.
What soundtrack do you like that's not songs? That's what I'm saying.
Like a score.
I love really like the Dark Knight.
Paris, Texas. But gosh, now. There's so many.
Shall we say goodbye with one of the many tracks that you've been responsible for putting in movies, and Sarah, it's like your whimsy.
Oh wow, you're talking about before. Would you rather?
Really hard to choose. This is a thing with your accomplishments.
Can I choose?
All.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think? Tell me between what and what. I don't have my glasses on.
So we've got
supermodel, coconut, or. I think I'm going to go with coconut. Just let's go
Lime and the coconut. She's going to go with Lime and the Coconut, ladies and gentlemen.
Chose that song, so excellent. Thank you,
Karen Ragman. Thank you very much for joining us
on
Breakfast this morning. If you missed any of that, you could probably catch up with it on the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Or you can. It's on the BFM website. You go to BCasts and you have breakfast and you just do that and you just help yourself.
Any added light on Harry Nilsson? Always awesome.
Do you love Harry Nilsson?
Thanks, Karen.
I love Harry Nilsson so much. His son just reached out to me. Put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she called the doctor, woke him up and said, Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, Doctor, to relieve his bellyache. I said, get this straight. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and pulled up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and pulled up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and pulled up. Put the lime in the coconut, you called your doctor, woke him up, said, Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, Doctor, to relieve his bellyache. I said, Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, in the morning. Ooh, 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 ooh.
Ain't there nothing I can take, I said, doctor. Now let me get this straight. You put the lime in your coconut, you drink and pour up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drink and pour up. Put a lime in the coconut, you drink and pour up. Put the lime in the coconut, you're such a silly woman. Put a lime in the coconut and drink them both together. Put the lime in the coconut, then you feel better. Put the lime in the coconut, drink them both down. Put the lime in the coconut and call me in the morning. Woo, ain't there nothing you can dig? I say woo, to relieve your belly ache. You say well, woo, ain't there nothing I can take? I say woo, to relieve your belly ache. You say yeah, ain't there nothing I can take? I say woo, to relieve his belly ache. I say doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I say doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I say doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I say doctor, you're such a silly woman. Put the lime in the coconut and drink them both together. Put the lime in the coconut and you feel better. Put the lime in the coconut, drink them both up. Put the lime in the coconut and call me in the morning. Yes, you call me in the morning. If you call me in the morning, I'll tell you what to do. If you call me in the morning, I'll tell you what to do. If you call me in the morning, I'll tell you what to do. If you call me in the morning, I'll tell you what to do. And if you call me in the...
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.